SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Thursday. Race fans, Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964, if you're listening to Sirius XM Online, and at our website, too, stevebick.com. A sunny, crisp, beautiful fall day here in upstate New York. I suppose if they were going to run the Breeders' Cup at Saratoga, today would have been a good day to do it. That's my favorite discussion on the internet. They should have a Breeders' Cup at Saratoga. No, they shouldn't. bad idea. Not happening. Stop. Find another windmill to tilt. A nice Thursday and cards drawn yesterday for the Saturday action. A lot of state bred stuff. And as we mentioned with the showcase in New York and the million in Maryland and fold in Friday night at Remington Park, the Oklahoma Classics. So state bred focus. We even had a little state bred riff with Sid Fernando yesterday on Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill and Dale. And speaking of Hill and Dale, run, don't walk. How does it go? Run, don't walk to the Thoroughbred Daily News, a really terrific, extensive conversation with John Sakura. And John is just a unique personality and refreshing and brilliant. And I'll send the link out. You'll really enjoy it. It's the lead story today at TDN. Along with so many other topics, of course, that the last 24 hours produced, including Roaring Lion, who, of course, we talked about a little bit with Marcus Hirsch the other morning, and the declarations made for Champions Day. And Roaring Lion's going to cut back to the mile distance. They got that straight. And I guess the footing is a little better on the straight than it is on the as they call it, the round course. So he will not participate in the Champions, but in the QE2. So that focus, we'll get a little of that in. Tomorrow, maybe a Nick Luck visit is in order, right? Certainly there is some more steeplechase visits in order. Bill Gallo and Sean Clancy. One today, one tomorrow. And we also are looking forward to a visit with John Hennigan. The all-in video production and the Hennigans, who do such great work, going back to their first foray, first Saturday in May, and they're tied on to Breeders' Cup debuts on Monday, all in. So we're going to talk to John, and he and his brother certainly know in how to position themselves and spread it around when you're tracking in a whole bunch of storylines into the big event. And they got so lucky that year. You think about it, with first Saturday in May, well, we could touch on that. They got so lucky with the horses. You know, they picked a bunch of horses, basically virtually a year out, more or less, to track. And they ended up with almost all of them making the Derby. I mean, that alone, they should be doing the the Derby future buck, the Hennigan brothers, because that was remarkable. And you know, Barbaro, of course, one of them, and Sharp Humor, and they I think at least six, if I'm not mistaken, six of the horses that they started to track ended up making the Derby. So, looking forward to a Hennigan visit. Tony Black today as well, and maybe Tony can shed some light on the, I'm sure, unpleasant discussions that resulted in Tuesday's cancellation at Philadelphia because the hot box was out and the riders were annoyed and it had broken a couple of days earlier, been repaired, and then it broke again and resulted in a job action. So we'll talk to Tony. Steve Haskin cannot join us today, and I'll take a minute to extend condolences. Steve lost his brother yesterday, and you know, he only ever so often talked about his brother and growing up in Brooklyn. And I know that his brother had been sick off and on, and Steve would go from Jersey to visit him often, and would regularly tie in a trip. You know, whenever he was coming to Belmont or Aqueduct, he would tie in a trip to see his brother, and extend our sympathies to Steve and Joan and Mandy and all the extended Haskin family. So Steve will be with the family, will be with his family here probably the next week, Shiva and so forth. So thoughts go out to Steve, and I'm sure if you want to, I know people have, the word kind of spread yesterday a little, and if you want to, those of you that on Facebook, you can extend some kind thoughts and sympathies to Steve on his brother's passing. We're going to do a little Hong Kong today, and as it happens, we're going to get a chance to talk to Andrew Hawkins. He is in North America and has been. He went to Woodbine. He went to Belmont. He continues to tromp across North America here in this little intercession that he has before returning to Australia. And they actually, you've got Hong Kong going on right now. The Thursday Happy Valley card that is kind of unusual, rare situation that saw Thursday morning action. And what time is it? It's it might be done by now. We'll catch up with Andrew, and we're looking forward to starting some conversations with Graham Cunningham, too, international correspondent. And, of course, on the international scene, speaking of Australia, after Winx's most recent success, yet another where she managed to cause consternation and alarm for a couple of seconds until she kicked it into high gear. She prepares for another Coxplate, and what's that? It's got to be next. Let's see. Let's look at that calendar, because there is first Tuesday in November. So the Cox Plate has got to be the 30th, maybe. All right. We'll let Andrew lead us into that. And here we go. I'm just checking. Cox Plate. There we go. It's on Saturday. I thought it would be, so it's 10 days out from the Melbourne Cup. 27th is the Cox Plate. So that's the Winx. The next big assignment opportunity for Winx. We'll get a little from Andrew on that as well. Yesterday, take a couple of minutes before the break, and yesterday, the carryover sequence at Belmont. And it was funny because we talked, Seth and I, when we rifled through the sequence, I agreed, or Seth agreed with me, the suggestion that it was a squirrely sequence. And even though it didn't totally prove out that way, it would have been a disaster right from the get-go because I wouldn't have used Subalu, Ned Allard, with a factum filly, and I absolutely, I just, she wasn't in the top five. She goes off at 10 to 1, pays $23. I thought, well, this thing is going to be as out of control as speculated. But what happened subsequently was you had three favorites and 2 second choices from that point on. And so if you managed to get through that first leg, the fourth race, and you used Subalu, Stonehenge, that's Gil Campbell. And in fact, Factum, how old is this? This is a two-year-old. Because Factum, Factum came up last week with Sid. That's the Super Saver brother, who I believe has moved, and Gil Campbell stood him, and I believe has now been moved to Ohio. But this is Stonehenge is the Campbells. So Ned Allard sends out that one, and if you had that horse, if you managed to get to Subalu, the rest of it was very haveable. 770 on second choice, Stars Will Burn. Five-star Bunt, you know, one of the MTOs in that sixth race, and was 2-5 for Linda Rice. So you know, you had that. You had the even money Ascot Walk. Those three horses we talked about would have gotten you through. Barrier Island didn't run well. Just sort of went around. Didn't really offer anything. But Ascot Walk, even money. 2-1 on Winter Union as the favorite in that eighth race allowance. And then the second choice at 7-2, Good Old Boy for Michael Maker. And Bill Butler for the nightcap. So, what did you get back if you found that $21 winner in the opening leg? The pick six pays $13,000. $12,975. Nothing wrong with that. And then at Keeneland, can't say we didn't point out the filmmaker. First-time starter, 1560 on War Film. That was awfully nice and confidently handled by Ricardo Santana Jr. L&N Racing, they bought this one, as we had told you, about you know, Cortland, Don Adam, and Filmmaker. So, very nice first time out. And the rest of the action was pretty straightforward. You had Neil Pessin, slight upset with the Lothenbach. Bell's the one. And there was somebody else that won at Keeneland that was a decent price. Take a break here. Back after this.
Racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
The Breeders' Cup is just around the corner, and ExpressBet is your way to bet the top prep races from around the world. Santa Anita, Keeneland, Belmont, Woodbine, ExpressBet has them all. And not only can you get your bets in online or on your smartphone or tablet with ExpressBet, you can also watch the races from most tracks in crystal clear high definition. Ready to get started? Sign up for an ExpressBet account today to receive a $500 welcome bonus. That's $500 cash in your pocket that you can use to bet the Breeders' Cup. Visit ExpressBet.com to get started. Think you have what it takes to play in the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge and win your share of $1 million in prizes? Then head to ExpressBet to register. The BCBC is the country's biggest live handicapping tournament with ExpressBet. You can get in on the action without leaving home. Don't have an ExpressBet account? No worries. Sign up today and receive up to a $500 welcome bonus. Check out ExpressBet.com to learn more. Must be 18 or older and 21 in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet LLC and reside in a state where such activity is legal. When prohibited, National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Hi, John Parada here, inviting you to join me in the Dublin Racing Club, along with friends like Steve Bick and Tom Durkin. If you have an interest in Ireland and horse racing, it's the best way to be involved with both. So log on now to DublinRacingClub.com and come join us at one of Ireland's 26 racetracks.
The Dublin Racing Club is designed to introduce racing fans to the ownership experience by participating in the sport in Ireland. For more information on the Dublin Racing Club, log on to DublinRacingClub.com.
There's more good news about Pennsylvania's breeding program. Last year, the number of state-bred live foals rose by nearly 30%. Many other states saw a drop of between 10 and 20%. This says that Pennsylvania truly has North America's fastest-growing and most lucrative breeding program. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back at the races, seven horse. So good. Haven't heard that in a while. And we've got actually a couple of calls, which will slip in. We've got a perfect opportunity here. Our man, John in New York, one of the great longtime listener callers in ATR. When did you start listening to the show, John?
Maybe 10, 12 years ago.
Yeah, easily. You're one of the favorites. They love you on Twitter.
Okay. Todd Fletcher continues to struggle with the first-time starters. He's like one for 38. I mean, have you come to a reason for this? I'm out of nowhere.
It's very odd. And there was speculation, and I don't want to drop it in Bob Duncan's lap. Nobody could figure it this summer. It was just unusual. I mean, and you can't even say, well, maybe the majority of the two-year-olds were two-turn types, that just doesn't make that doesn't make any sense. I mean, the way Pletcher for years has approached his young horses is, you know, the same way that Brett Calhoun and Steve Asmussen and, you know, all the Southwest style, you know, quarter horser types would get their babies to break. It's been very strange.
I asked this question to Jack Wolf about a month ago.
What'd Jack say?
And Jack says he's only as good as his horses. So according to him, the quality possibly has just dropped off.
That was the reference to two-turn types that just aren't going to be fast breakers, or the types that, you know, that can sustain a run for, you know, at least five furlongs, you know, which is what the early season two-year-old races, you know, generally, you know, five and a half to get things going. Could it be a bad crop of purchases? I guess. Yeah, you know what's funny though, John, is that the ones on the turf, several of the turf horses seemed quite okay. I mean, he's going to send two nice 2 year olds to the juvenile turf in Current and Opry. It could be a buying missteps, and you know it is one of the strangest occurrences in recent memory on that, you know, on this kind of a question.
Okay. When I go to XBTV, they have the workouts there.
Yeah.
And I guess when two horses are running against each other, you'd like to see another horse at the end pull away from the other horse. I mean, that would be a good sign, would you say?
It depends on it, you know. Depends on what was being asked and what the plan was, you know. Typically, with Baffert, you can see, you know, certain patterns and ones that are being asked to go to gallop out, you know, all the way to the backstretch. I mean, that's a Baffert style, but it doesn't necessarily, you know, the horse that pulls up more quickly, it doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, that it's a bad performance or a bad work or, you know, a negative implication. But go ahead.
Yeah, because when Chad Brown works his horses, if they start off together, they stay even with each other, and they stay even with each other the whole race, even through the gallop out. And so how do you judge what's going on there? I mean, they just stick to each other.
Yes, like yes. No, it's true. It's true, and you see it in the comments from the Clocker comments. You note that, and it's very rare that one, you know, drowns another. And you know, and frankly, to me, that's a positive in a lot of ways, because you don't, as an owner, let's say, you don't want to be a punching bag for the big horses in the barn. You don't want your runners to get drilled time and time again by the better horses in the barn. So, you know, working to keep them together, and you know, don't, you know, giving instructions to the riders, you know, don't let one or the other, you know, get away. To me, that's a positive. And, you know, and Chad doesn't seem to work them. I mean, some of his horses work fast because they're fast horses. You know, that's one of the great sayings in racing: fast horses work fast. But to me, it's a positive. You know, nice, steady, long works, and, you know, every so often something maybe to sharpen speed. But, no, I know exactly what you mean. Baffert doesn't seem to mind or gives instructions to riders to keep going with certain horses, especially if they're coming back from, you know, from layoffs. And so he might have sprinters that are going to challenge a two-turn horse and make a two-turn horse work to keep up, and then the sprinter, you know, basically eases up past the wire, and the route horse goes on with it. I'll let Tony Black. It's a great topic, John, and I'll let Tony riff on that in hour two.
One more thing. Spoke to Gary Young a couple weeks ago about a horse that they purchased called Gold Credit, who's running today in Keeneland.
Uh-huh.
Gold Credit is running at Keeneland today.
All right. And what do you think? What did Gary have to tell you? Check those notes.
They like him very much. He's supposed to run October 7th, but he's in today.
Well, Gary, you saw Gary. You saw Gary when he came to town.
No, I emailed him.
Okay, good for you. Look at you.
And they like him a lot. But the clock report for Keeneland today just gave him 2 B minus work.
Well, don't. Mike Welch tells you all the time: don't confine your opinion just to the grade. Read the comments. You know, because and Andy Harrington is the same way. I mean, okay, yes, you see an A minus. Oh well, obviously that's a great work. But don't just look at the grade. You got to see what was, you know, being asked of the horse under the circumstance.
Okay,
that's all. That's my, you know, that's my read on that. Because a lot of times people. People have said, I see them interacting with Mike, and they'll say, oh, you only gave that horse a... Well, okay, that might be the case, but...
Can I tell you exactly what he said?
Sure.
The work was October 13th, working in a solo 5 to wrap up the pattern, traveling along in an even fashion, and then on October 3rd, 35.3 for the final 3 furlongs over this sped-up surface while in hand outside of company.
Well, and that's a perfect, there you go, that's the perfect companion comment to B-minus, just, you know, just a maintenance drill, just a solid drill in them, you know, within themselves, wasn't asked and was in hand. I mean, it's just a solid enough, you know, did what was being asked of them. And it's not a standout work, and it's not a negative work. It's exactly as described. My reaction, John, to the workout reports, you know, I think everybody interprets them different and incorporates them into their play differently. If there's things that I like about, you know, particularly with first-time starters, if there's things that I like, you know, the win early breeding, win early connections, trainer, etc., you know, if there's things that are already giving a positive indication, you know, if there's glowing reports, that's great. If there aren't...
Do we call this a neutral report?
Yeah, a neutral slash mildly encouraging.
Okay, Steve. Thanks for taking my call.
Not at all. John in New York, always provocative. You know, the companion to that, I'll tell you when, for me, when the clocking report comments are really important. It's not with the horses that, you know, that everybody expects the talking first-time starters. It's with the long shots. It's with the horses from less high-profile connections and horses that may have slightly, you know, obscure breeding. I mean, there's two places, and this summer at Saratoga was a great example of this. The horse from Alejandro Mamo from Finger Lakes that came in. That was a horse that was on, you know, that had positive pedigree support for win early and you know, had had siblings that were fast. Those are the things that I'm looking for. Fast damn fast siblings. And then if there's positive comments about obscure horses, that's when I'll feather them in and use them prominently. When it comes to, you know, the big connections, the big outfits, you don't necessarily, I get there, you're almost looking for negative for reasons to go against, as opposed to reinforcing your expectation. But I mean, those comments were, those are neutral, you know, maybe slightly positive. So before we reach out for Andrew Hawkins, let me get DJ in Kentucky in as well. DJ, good morning.
Steve, thanks for taking my call.
Not at all.
Real quick, I wanted to compliment you on the music you guys play in and out of your segments. You got really great taste. Keep it rolling.
Thank you.
But what I wanted to get to was, I don't know if you remember, last week you had Nick Tamaro on. Mm-hmm. And almost in passing, I think he was getting ready to get off the phone, he gave out a $20 winner at Keeneland named Quick, Quick, Quick.
Yeah.
And I thought that was interesting. I did want to see if you have him on. I don't know if it's today or tomorrow, but I thought this would be a great opportunity to, if it doesn't pry too much, to ask him a horse like that. And I remember him saying he was, quote, looking forward to betting this horse. You know, looking forward to betting a double-digit horse. I'd love to pick his brain, or if you could ask him how he bet it. Because the most challenging thing in this game, I think we would agree, is not, you know, who to pick, but how to bet it.
Sure.
And I would love to know the variety of ways that perhaps how he built tickets around a horse like that. Now, they all don't come in, but since this horse did come in, I'd love to know.
Sure.
The variety of ways he built tickets around that horse. Because, listen, I played it safe. I hit a couple doubles with that horse based on hearing that. But I'd love to know, you know, how many ways he kind of built around that horse. That'd be great.
Absolutely. I can speculate that in addition to betting him to win, betting her to win, because she's a filly, Ian Wilkes. And typically, Nick's a big trifecta player, and so Nick will key a horse like that and build tri tickets. You know, especially around that price, a horse like that's a middle priced long shot is an ideal. That's when Nick does well in contests. It's with horses like this, with trifectas. That's how he finished fourth that year in the Breeders' Cup betting challenge. I mean, that's his approach.
Okay, yeah, because I'm more of a horizontal player, and I've just had the figure. Hearing him speak week after week, it seems like he plays a lot of verticals as well. And I just think if you could ask him how he played that horse, because that'd be a great microcosm. Just how to bet, man, that's the most challenging thing in this game. But anyway, yeah, if you could ask him that. And then the last thing, have you looked at the Sycamore today?
Just a little bit with the yesterday when we had the conversation with Byron, and you know, I didn't have anything clever beyond the obvious, except when we then, and I'm just reaching for it right now, except when we then started talking about the morning line, because I hadn't seen the morning line yet, and then when I asked Byron, you know, what price was the Cooptado, and he said 20-1. I couldn't believe it.
The
horse of Morley's. If Cooptado were to run back to that Laurel Turf Cup, I mean, he's going to save all the ground inside, and you know, hello, Don Julio came back and won again this week in New York, and I thought at 20-1, that's a kind of horse that I want to use somehow, basically. Other than that, you know, Arklow and Bigger Picture, you know, I don't have anything clever, you know, looking at this group.
It's been pretty dry. I'm assuming we get firm turf. You know, so that'll be nice to see. The only other, other than the obvious, Teodoro, would you give him a break since that Belmont race? He, you know, his first in the country was on soft. Would you give him another shot? I mean, he was a tick under 10-1 in that Grade One at Belmont. I was thinking about maybe giving him another shot on firm turf, but other than the obvious, that's about all I was going to look at.
Well, and that's the other Morley. And, of course, McPeak has got the bookends outside, yeah. Inside and outside with Harlan Strong and Somin Tieme. You know, Somin Tieme, by the way, at 30-1, has races that are very competitive. And McPeak has a history of having horses wake up at Keeneland. The Teodoro, Morley's now had the time since the horse came to North America and ran for Dascom in that start, and now has had some time to work with him. I don't know. I don't know if
I'm reading.
I don't know why would he? Well, I just don't know why he had. I guess he had mostly. Yeah, I'm looking at the turf. Maybe the turf was an issue. We're so conditioned to assume that. Well, no, that day was soft. There's no doubt. But I'm saying in Europe, when he ran, the places that had Haydock and Newbury and so forth in York, he pretty much got quick ground. He's got two races. It really, I guess that race at. I don't know.
That says it all.
He's going to need. You know what? If you're going to take a Morley at double digits, I think I want Cuptato.
Oh, that's fair. That's fair. Yeah, and I feel like it's going to be one of those races where the middle of that field, 4, 5, 6. You might like if you try to reach. It might be. We might be struggling to get a price up on top at least, but still a fun race.
Yeah, no, it is, and there's a case to be made too for. I'm looking from a pace standpoint. There's a little bit of a case maybe to be made for Zulu Alpha that, is coming off a terrific, scooped up for 80,000. Michael Way, who of course has made a habit of high priced claims, mostly with Mike Maker. This one with John Ortiz. And it's funny, Ortiz's horses have been running well without winning at Keeneland. He's 0 for 7, but he's got 3 seconds and 3/3. And they took this one at Churchill a month ago, and he's going to be a 10 to 12 to 1 shot, and he's going to be well placed. I mean, there's not a ton of speed in here, frankly. That's that's the element of this. That's one of the reasons Cuptato is a little interesting. Can suck along down inside and maybe finish well. But there is not a lot of speed in here, DJ.
Well, in that same price range, you said Dual Alpha. I'm always you got to respect Grand Motion, and I'm looking at the 11. Can't Help Believing, second off the layoff.
Yep.
And I think that extra panel going a mile and a half is not going to do anything but help this horse.
Agreed.
Listen, I'd love to get a price home, but you keep looking back. So, I look at that 11, and I feel like I could make a fair argument there, too. He's been – there's nothing but G's, next to his past performances in general. But I don't know. This is going to be a fun race to watch. And I think a lot of these are going to show up at Churchill in a few weeks, don't you think?
Well, that's been the plan for Brad Cox. Bigger picture, also, Mike Maker has maintained him on the turf list. And, Can't Help Believing, the 7-year-old, second off the layoff, ran well enough at Woodbine in September. And two encouraging things, you look back to that Sky Classic win at Woodbine before he got hurt. And, Joe Bravo aboard for that. He's a horse that, that is a little tractable. And three tries at Keeneland, he's been second three times.
Yeah.
So
I look a few races prior to that. I mean, he finishes ahead of Beach Patrol at Monmouth in July as well, in that Grade One. I don't know. It is going to. I don't know where to go. But that, I keep looking back at that horse. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, it's a good group, and in fact, all three of these stakes, the way the second this weekend stake group came up tomorrow, the Valley View's terrific, and then we look to Saturday's card, and you know, even though the big action is behind us, the Raven Run as well on Saturday, so a nice several days here at Keeneland coming up, and I think we're finally out of the weather woods as well. But today's Sycamore,
yeah,
absolutely
beating up. Hey, well, Steve, thanks for your time, and really, if you could pick Tamaro's brain a little,
we will
on that
tomorrow.
I'd appreciate it. Have a good day.
You too, and we'll get. I had Casey try to reach Nick, and we'll save it for tomorrow. And of course, with Nick tomorrow, we'll go over the New York Bred Showcase card, which came up really good, predictably good. This is always a fun. Always a fun day, and you know, there's a little bit of a transition going on too in New York with the state breds. There's some fresh faces that are starting to show up. You know, some of the veterans that have dominated at times in these divisions, but the Iroquois, the Mohawk, the Hudson, the Ticonderoga, the Maid of the Mist, the Sleepy Hollow, the Empire Distaff, which is the newest of the fall showcase races, and then the Empire Classic. You got 11 in the Classic, 12 in the Distaff, and the two of those races, by the way, will be part of that Far Hills Belmont Pick Four, the second division of the Foxbrook and the Grand National, races 5 and 6 at Far Hills are companion races with the 9th and 10th tomorrow. Or Saturday at Belmont, the Empire Distaff and the Empire Classic. So you've got 12 in the Distaff. You've got a full field of 14 in the Sleepy Hollow, 12 in the Maid of the Mist. The Ticonderoga drew 8, 9 for the Hudson. The Mohawk got 9 as well. And the Iroquois drew 10. So absolutely terrific. And then full fields as well. We're in the 6th with Kid Chocolate. And we're trying to choose between the 6 furlong opportunity Saturday or the mile in the 8th. And they ended up splitting the state bred turf for 2-year-olds, the 1st and the 6th. So they got a huge outpouring. They had like 28 horses entered, and they split it. So we're in there in mid-card as well. So the non-stake races came up great, too. So it terrific, terrific day. And the same thing when it comes to the Maryland Million, if you haven't had a chance. They've got big, nice, robust fields for it's all stakes plus the starter. They run those starter handicaps for 50 and 60,000. So they've got a fabulous card at Laurel on Saturday as well. Distaff with 7, and then the ladies on the turf, 9 in there, and the sprint with 8, 11 in the nursery, 12 in the Lassie, 11 in the turf, and 10 in the classic. And you know, we talked yesterday. Even if you're a Maryland bred, you don't get preference in these races. The Maryland Million is for the stallion program, like we talked yesterday with Sid. Being Maryland sired is the priority. And only if there's horses that come out from the sire side do the Maryland bred, quote-unquote, get in. And I learned this with Williams Lucky Gray. We wanted to run 3 years ago in the turf for a race for the girls. And she was Maryland bred, but not Maryland sired. She was by Dunkirk. And so she could only be in also eligible. And you only get in if a sired horse doesn't run. You can't take a space of a sired runner. So good card, Maryland as well. Let's take a break. Andrew Hawkins is going to join us, and we'll hear about his traipsing around North America. He's been to Woodbine, Belmont. He's seeing tracks he's always wanted to see. And we'll catch up on some Hong Kong news as well. Back after this with Andrew. Later, Tony Black. Much more. Stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
The Breeders' Cup is just around the corner, and ExpressBet is your way to bet the top prep races from around the world. Santa Anita, Keeneland, Belmont, Woodbine, ExpressBet has them all. And not only can you get your bets in online or on your smartphone or tablet with ExpressBet, you can also watch the races from most tracks in crystal clear high definition. Ready to get started? Sign up for an ExpressBet account today to receive a $500 welcome bonus. That's $500 cash in your pocket that you can use to bet the Breeders' Cup. Visit ExpressBet.com to get started. Think you have what it takes to play in the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge and win your share of $1 million in prizes? Then head to ExpressBet to register. The BCBC is the country's biggest live handicapping tournament with ExpressBet. You can get in on the action without leaving home. Don't have an ExpressBet account? No worries. Sign up today and receive up to a $500 welcome bonus. Check out ExpressBet.com to learn more. Must be 18 or older and 21 in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet LLC and reside in a state where such activity is legal. When you're prohibited, National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Hi, John Parada here, inviting you to join me in the Dublin Racing Club, along with friends like Steve Bick and Tom Durkin. If you have an interest in Ireland and horse racing, it's the best way to be involved with both. So log on now to DublinRacingClub.com and come join us at one of Ireland's 26 racetracks.
The Dublin Racing Club is designed to introduce racing fans to the ownership experience by participating in the sport in Ireland. For more information on the Dublin Racing Club, log on to DublinRacingClub.com.
There's more good news about Pennsylvania's breeding program. Last year, the number of state-bred live foals rose by nearly 30%. Many other states saw a drop of between 10 and 20%. This says that Pennsylvania truly has North America's fastest-growing and most lucrative breeding program. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
I want to be rich and I want lots of money. I don't care about clever, I don't care about funny. I want loads of clothes and fuck loads of diamonds. I heard people die while they're trying to find them. And I'll take my clothes off and it will be shameless, cause everyone knows that's how you get famous. I'll look at the sun and I'll look in the mirror. On the right track, yeah, I'm on to a winner. I don't know what's right and what's real anymore. I don't know how I'm meant to feel anymore. And when do you think it will all become clear? 'Cause I'm being taken over by the fear. We're
back at the races, coming up on 10 before the top of the hour. The great, brilliant Lily Allen. It's one of the great lines. I look at the sun, I look in the mirror. Unbelievably clever. And another favorite K that we pulled out, right? The Stacks of Wax. Andrew Hawkins. Andrew Hawkins is like Jack Kerouac. He's making his way on the road throughout North America, visiting racetracks that he's always wanted to see, including Belmont and Woodbine. And he's gonna have to go back and work in Australia at some point. Andrew, good morning.
Good morning, Steve, and it's great to actually be on the bay on a similar time zone to you for once, rather than having to speak to you at a late hour in Hong Kong. Obviously, it's great to do it at a late hour in Hong Kong, but yeah, definitely nice to be doing it in your morning as well.
Well, before we talk about this Thursday card at Happy Valley and what went on last week and what's upcoming, let's get a survey of your experiences during your travels. I mean, talk about what you've seen and what you've been impressed with, and what your takeaways are so far on this North American swing.
Well, like any good journey, it had a couple of hiccups to start. We were a bit late arriving from Hong Kong into New York, so I didn't even get to Belmont in the end, unfortunately. We had a few issues coming through immigration. So the closest I got to Belmont was seeing it on the approach into JFK. But look, it looks a great racetrack, and it's definitely high up. I've spoken to a couple of friends of mine who went to Mara, and I've already said that I definitely want to get back next year, whether it be for Belmont Stakes or whether it be for Belmont Derby or one of the major meetings in the summer or leading into the summer. So hopefully make it to Belmont next year. But look, I did get to Woodbine last weekend. I was there for the Canadian International, and I'd say it was quite a charming little track with the paddock and the freight ring at the back. And it was quite an experience. It was very cold, actually. They just told me the weather had just turned into that fall weather where it was really very brisk. So you couldn't spend too much time outside, but it was great to be there as Desmond Campbell won the Canadian National. Shaker Raker won the E.P. Taylor. And I spent a lot of time talking to the track announcer up there. Look, he's another person who's come through Hong Kong, Robert Geller. He spent 7 years in Hong Kong in the mid-90s before obviously then heading to Seattle for ML Downs and then across to Woodbine. So he and I are similar enough in that we both come through Australia, gone to Hong Kong. Who knows, maybe one day I'll make it into the States. But look, I've got an exciting couple of days coming up. I'm going to spend the next 2 days, Friday and Sunday, at Keeneland, seeing my former colleague Pat Cummings in Kentucky. I'll get to make a trip as well to Churchill Downs, obviously not racing, but go to the Derby Museum on Sunday morning, get to see the Twin Spires for the first time. And then, as you say, head back to Australia to work. Look, it's going to be exciting to be back home. I'll be at the Cox Plate Saturday week when Winx goes for a fourth Cox Plate in Melbourne, so that will be very exciting indeed.
And I was looking and trying to figure out the date. I wasn't sure if it was a week out or 10 days, as it turns out, for the Cox Plate ahead of the Melbourne Cup. But I did want you to riff on that. The survey of tracks and the opportunity to see races like the E.P. Taylor and the International. I had David Simcock on the other day, and we talked about Lightning Spear coming up toward Breeders' Cup. Roger Varian considering Shaker Raker as well for the Breeders' Cup and a late addition. So there is still, of course, the Champions Day card on Saturday to feed in, and we'll see what the fallout is of that. And of course, Longchamp and everything that went on Arc Day. You're getting a maximum exposure here toward Breeders' Cup, and it really kind of exposes what an international flavor we've got going on. When we talk about Hong Kong, as we have, and keeping an eye and what Winx has done for people to be aware of Australasia, and to me, the remarkable interest and you know the accessibility of the international scene has really been the most notable shift or development in recent memory.
Most definitely. I think it's definitely been something that has developed along with things like social media, where, as you say, the accessibility of international racing these days is at a level never seen before. And it's not just something that's happening here in the States. You see it in Australia, for me. To the UK, to a lesser degree, I think there's always been a bit more of a global view in that they know within Europe they're able to travel quite a bit, and there's that accessibility to European racing, which differs from their own product at home. But definitely, the States and Australia, you're seeing this growing knowledge of international racing, whether it be, as you say, for the States down in the Australasian area, even for Australia with the States, this Australian totes and the Australian vision providers are taking a lot more American racing, North American, a lot more of the North American product, to the point where you know it's quite usual to be able to walk into a betting shop or a pub or something in Australia early in the morning and see and bet on Mohawk, for instance, Mohawk harness racing. So there are opportunities there now for a lot more. There are a lot more wagering opportunities available, and I think that's been the change, is that there's also a lot more interest. People are now taking stock of what is available abroad, as opposed to an insular view, which I think has been the case most certainly in Australia, and I'd say from what I've heard in the States as well, in years gone by.
This next round of opportunities for Winx, after the Cox Plate, what's going to happen from what you can read?
My viewpoint on that's changed over the course of the last 6 months. Probably if you'd asked me back in April, I would have thought if she comes out with the fourth Cox Plate, they'll probably retire her. There's a book that's been commissioned by the owners, which is scheduled to release the Monday after the Cox Plate. So I always thought that would be the end point for her career, and it'd be a satisfactory end point. No horses on four Cox Plates. She's currently on three with Kingston Town, and that's always been considered the pinnacle achievement in Australian racing. So to win a fourth Cox Plate, that would elevate her to a level where she'd be put on the same pedestal as the likes of Farlap or Carbine, as some of Australia's premier thoroughbreds. But during the spring down in Australia, there have been more and more suggestions that they'd want to race Ron. It makes sense for her to race on because obviously the Southern Hemisphere breeding season doesn't start until next August, September. So if she was to finish her career, they could serve her very late, but that could then potentially jeopardise future seasons, and I'm sure that they'd want to maximise her opportunities. So I think the likeliest path from here is they will race her on. I think they'll probably give her a light campaign at the start of next season. The one thing that Chris Waller has said throughout is that he's disappointed that he didn't take the Royal Ascot opportunity when it was there, and it wouldn't surprise me at all to see her head to Royal Ascot, try and finish her career on a high at Ascot, and then potentially stay around, maybe be served by Frankel or Galileo to Southern Hemisphere time. That would be my gauge of it. But look, we weren't expecting them to retire Maccabi Diva after she won at the Melbourne Cup. They made the announcement post race, so it wouldn't surprise if they did come out and say, after she wins a fourth Cox Plate, presuming she does, that she's retired. But the vibe I'm getting is that she's going to race on after that 4 o'clock plate. I think that would be the end of her campaign, but I reckon you'll see her back at the start of 2019.
Well, you do sense that the gigantic following would love to see her, you know, come anywhere, whether it's Ascot or you know, just make a trip to be, you know, that much more viewable, where people could, you know, on this hemisphere could come and get a chance to see her. And I don't sense that they're the connections don't seem to be concerned about her getting beat either. I mean, it in their suggestions, and it's not as if it doesn't feel like she's campaigned with the idea of protecting, you know, the wins and ensuring that she wins. They don't seem obsessed by that, which is something that seems to happen when horses go on these kinds of schemes.
Definitely. I think the one thing that was of critical importance there is that she obviously suffered defeat early in her career as a two-year-old. She was unbeaten as a two-year-old, but as a three-year-old, especially early in her three-year-old career, three-year-old campaign, she was beaten a number of times. And I think that is why they're not as scared of defeat as, say, the connection with Black Caviar were when she went on her unbeaten streak, because obviously she'd never been beaten. That was a streak that they wanted to maintain. I think if Winx were to be beaten now, it wouldn't tarnish her legacy in the same way it might have tarnished the legacy of, say, Black Caviar. She's already proven herself to be an incredibly classy mare, a champion mare. She's proven versatile, you know, with her win streak. Her wins come from between 7 furlongs and a mile and 3/8. I mean, that's pretty impressive anywhere in the world. So, look, I think if she were to taste the feed, I don't think there'd be the same reaction. It wouldn't harm the way she's viewed by the history books in the same way as it might have with other horses before her.
Well, the following that has been generated and the excitement that she generates with people staying up to watch her run, it's just good. It's just a positive, and it continues to grow that, you know, that international interest, you know, particularly from North American audiences. That, you know, I mean, when I started following racing, the international elements. I mean, I knew about the Grand National, I knew about the Epsom, and that was pretty much it. I think I learned about the Melbourne Cup probably next, and. You know, and then the more I read about racing, you know, the more references there are to, you know, to international fixtures, and you know, particularly of course because the Derby and Oaks and Churchill's, you know, Churchill's, the development of the races here, I mean, we're completely patterned on Epsom, and so you learn about international racing the more, you know, the more you get into, you know, the domestic interest, the you know, the more exposure you get, and it's been to me as much fun as anything, you know, over the last 15 years, particularly, you know, doing the show, the conversations we started having with Pat Cummings when he was doing Dubai Race Night, and you know, then Kate Miller and subsequently Nick Luck for everything from an international, from the European standpoint, and then adding in the Hong Kong and Australasia conversations with you. It's layers and layers. I think there's even an interest. People are sort of catching on to what's going on in Korea, especially given that the Korea is investing in U.S. bloodstock as well as competing in North America. The KSA with the horses that Todd Pletcher and Ben Colebrook have been training. So it's just great. I mean, I think people can only benefit, and the more receptive we are in North America, and the more interest we show, I think the greater benefit we'll have in terms of attracting attention and most importantly, play. We want people. We want the international marketplace to bet on our races, and that that benefits everybody in the industry here. So let's take a couple of minutes, Andrew, and catch up on what's gone on. I mean, you've been here, but you're certainly keeping an eye on things back in Hong Kong as well, and an unusual Thursday card, in fact, at Happy Valley.
Yeah, Thursday card today. There was a holiday yesterday in Hong Kong, a religious holiday, so they had to run the card Thursday, which is unusual. There are a couple of Thursday cards this season, but look, it's been fascinating for me, actually, being in the States and seeing the time zones and the time frame in which Hong Kong is shown here. It just gives me that different perspective. You can talk about it as much as you want when you're in Hong Kong, but to be able to see the time of day it works, it's been really interesting for me, and I can see now why Happy Valley is such a popular product here in the States. It's great to be able to wake up and be able to just switch on Happy Valley and watch racing at that incredible racetrack. As fascinating as they come anywhere in the world. There's six races down at the moment at Happy Valley. It's been one of those nights where apparently drawing low has been very critical. A number of winners have come from low draws. Although I do see that the last winner, Storm Signal, which was with that race run while we were on this chat, he drew wide. So it's obviously I'll have to watch that race and see what happened there. But look, it's been an interesting couple of weeks in Hong Kong. We've had races run at different times. We had a Saturday meeting last week for Friday night here in the States, and look, it was a fairly plain sort of meeting, but it was good to see local rider Vincent Ho come out, and he rode four winners for the first time in his career, so that was great for him. Very talented rider, but has been getting more opportunities with the departure of Joe Marrero. Now, as has been widely reported, it looks like Joe Marrero is going to be heading back to Hong Kong after failing the first stage of his test in Japan, so it'll be interesting to see whether those opportunities still exist for a jockey like Vincent Ho, but definitely an interesting landscape in Hong Kong at the moment, both without Joe Marrero and then with Marrero thrown back into the mix, along with Sylvester D'Souza, who was announced today, will be returning at the end of the month to Hong Kong, and also Alexis Bedell, French rider, who's had success in Hong Kong the last couple of winters. He was actually at Woodbine the other day, rode the runner-up in the EP Taylor, and he'll be heading back to Hong Kong as well. So it's a changing landscape. It's going to be very interesting to see how the next couple of months play out. And yes, look, we've also got a very interesting card coming up on Sunday, Saturday night, American time, with two Group 2 races at Sha Tin. We've got most of the best horses in town lining up. The only real notable absentees are horses like DB Tin and Beat the Clock, who will be resuming in a month's time, and also Ping Hai Star, who was injured earlier in the week, the Derby winner. But the likes of Beauty Generation, Pakistan Star, those types of horses, Eye Victory, Mr. Stunning, NASA, Singapore Sling, Nothing I Like More, Werther, Hot King Prawn. It's really a who's who of Hong Kong racing at the moment, lining up in the two Group 2s on Saturday night. So
Excellent. And I'm glad you brought up the Marrero situation. I mentioned it when I saw the headlines, and that, you know, he had not managed to. I'm assuming it was the written part. It wasn't even the language part of the test, right? He hadn't even gotten that far. It was the rules and etc. that the cultural test that he failed.
Yeah, that's right. So it was the written test. It's apparently a very difficult test. Test things about history. Very obscure questions, so I've been told. And look, it does take a number of writers a number of times to get through it. Only one writer passed the exam. Obviously, the Japanese writers have to go through it as well. But my understanding, I mean, I think Mirko de Muro failed the first time he did it, and he also failed the spoken part as well. But even jockeys like Yuga Kawada, failed it in the past, Keita Sasaki. So some of the champion riders in Japan actually failed the test the first time. So it's not necessarily the end of his Japanese aspirations, but it's definitely the end for the next 12 months. And a world-class rider like Marrero needs a home, and it wouldn't surprise to see him go back to Hong Kong, where he already has such strong connections. Trainer Don Sires, the champion trainer from last season, has already mooted putting him in as a stable rider, which means that it operates a little bit differently to a regular retained club retained rider in Hong Kong. It just means that his salary, instead of being paid for by the club, is paid for by the size stable and its owners. If he doesn't reach a certain threshold of winners, which, given it's Marrero, is highly unlikely.
I saw where they said he could come back and try again, and the provisional, you know, the temporary license only gives you the 90 days, and so back to Hong Kong he comes. All right, well, and back to Australia you'll go. When do you go back?
The parts, the U.S. next Tuesday night. I arrive back Thursday morning Australian time, and I start back in Australia the following Monday. So. A very exciting couple of weeks coming up for me personally.
Well, Andrew, enjoy Keeneland, and appreciate the update, and we'll talk about Australia, and talk to you when you get home as well. And Graham Cunningham will start to join us as soon as next week to talk Hong Kong. Safe travels the rest of the way, Andrew. NJ Hawkins on Twitter, of course, and we appreciate the visit.
Thanks, Dave. Cheers.
Andrew Hawkins. Take a timeout here. We'll swing back around, come back to Philadelphia, and Tony Black, and he can explain what was going on with that, with the hot box. What a mess. We'll see what insight he can provide. And we'll also use that that call from John in New York to get Tony's perspective on working out pairs of horses and staying together or galloping out and leaving one behind. That was a very timely topic, as it turned out. So, Tony Black next. Stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
DRF Sports Form Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Form delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsform. Enter code DRF Sports.
Are you on? University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard, too.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and Kent the Summer on Afternoon Delights, absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade One race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.